What did you do, Senator?
We're going to open our hearing of the Senate Education Committee. Today is March 19th, 2015. We have a couple of pieces of business to do. We're going to start out with a public hearing on Senate Bill 521. And I would recommend that all the students that are here are going to testify that haven't done it before. You get to see some other people do it first. So you'll understand there are certain common things that we always do in making sure that we identify ourselves and so on. So with that, we have a really great person who has worked in schools at medical schools and other kinds of places before. So with that, Senator Steiner Haywood, we would enjoy to hear the testimony about this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Haywood, State Senator from Senate District 17, and as you mentioned, also a family physician on faculty at Oregon Health and Science University. I appreciate your hearing Senate Bill 521 today. This is what we call in the trade a technical fix bill. As I think you will all remember, in the 2013 session, we passed Jenna's Law, which extended protections for concussions, around concussions, to kids playing club sports. In 2009, this body had passed Max's Law, which extended those protections to kids in schools. But in 2013, we extended the club sports. Unfortunately, as often happens, we had a little glitch, and there were some things said about private schools that really had been covered under Max's Law that then were OSAA, as they will testify, had some understandable confusion about. And so all this bill is doing is making it clear that all schools go under the provisions of Max's Law and all club sports go under the provisions of Jenna's Law. And it's really that straightforward, Mr. Chair. The gentleman to my right from OSAA will explain further and talk a little bit more about the importance of concussion protection, which I know this committee is well aware of. But this is a huge issue for our kids. Club sports are much more prevalent now. School sports are much more intense. And it's very important that we protect young people. The one other addition you should be aware of is that we've included psychologists in the list of people who can certify kids to go back to school. There's increasing evidence. These bills talk about return to play. There's increasing evidence that we also have to have return to school plans because we know that any brain activity, not just physical activity, can delay recovery from a concussion. However, we're not trying to specifically address that. We're just adding psychologists in as a clearing medical professional in anticipation down the road of thinking about that problem. And I would be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for our fellow senator? Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with your permission, I'm going to let these gentlemen testify.
Yes,
I'm going to go to my committee.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee, my name is Tom Welter. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. I reside in Portland, Oregon. As Senator Steiner Haywood indicated, we were here in 2009. Dr. Keister and myself were to testify and applaud the efforts of the Senate Education Committee at that time to pass Max's Law. We were one of the first states in the country to have a statewide concussion management program for all students in our schools. Our association is made up of 290 member high schools. 237 of them are public high schools. We have 53 private high schools. Last year, when Jenna's Law was passed, members of our committee supported Jenna's Law, extending that concussion management coverage to club sports teams. However, the definition of a non-school athletic team was written in the bill as an athletic team that includes members who are under the age of 18 and not affiliated with a public school. And by definition, then, that included our 53 private schools. And so this year, when we have doctors on our sidelines, we have to treat, if it's a public school playing a private school and a student is injured, one gets treated one way and one gets treated the other because one's under one law and one's under the other. And it would be much more consistent that we have one definition that all of our member schools would be under. And you have a letter, I think, from Dr. Jim Chestnut from Oregon Health Sciences University. He's a member of our Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. He was here last year testifying in front of Jenna's Law, and he's here supporting this amendment because it was never intended by him or, I think, by the committee. Our sports medicine advisory committee is made up of doctors from around our state, certified athletic trainers. Sitting to my immediate right is Dr. Mick Keister. He's the chair of our state sports medicine advisory committee. He has previously been the chair of the National High School Sports Medicine Advisory Committee for 4 years. And he's an expert recognized nationally in the area of concussion training, concussion management. In fact, last summer, the National High School, which includes 19,000 high schools across the country, had a concussion summit in Indianapolis, including 28, medical professionals in the area of concussion. And Dr. Keister was invited to chair that meeting. So I'm going to turn over the concussion management care and part of it to Dr. Mick Keister. Thank you. Any questions of me?
We'll wait if they come up.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here today. Dr. Michael Keister, I'm a physician, sports medicine and pediatric physician at the Slocum Center in Eugene, and as Mr. Welter said, chair of the Oregon School Activities Association Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. And as Dr. Steiner Hayward said, really this is a technical fix because there was a great deal of confusion. We were one of the first states, us and the state of Washington, were the first to have concussion legislation back in 2009, and that subsequently led to every other state and Washington, D.C. putting in similar legislation. With my position at the national level and with what we were able to do here in Oregon, it also afforded me the opportunity to work with several other states as they put their legislation together. And then, unfortunately, as we attempted to apply Max's law statewide with the addition of Jenna's law, that confusion was brought to bear. So, as Mr. Welter said, you ended up last year, if, for instance, my son was playing football at Marist, if we were playing any of the public schools, we were essentially playing under two different rules, one of which meaning that I was the team physician for Marist, and if we were playing Willamette or Springfield, who I'm also the team physician for, if it was a Springfield kid who was injured or who there was a suspicion of concussion by an official, the official could send that child off the field, I could evaluate him or the athletic trainer, and we could say, no, he's okay, it's not a concussion, he can go back. Whereas if it was a Marist student or Jesuit or Central Catholic, we couldn't do that because the law stipulates there was no same-day return to play, which was a logical thing to do really at the club sport level to try and be where there's not typically going to be athletic trainers and not typically going to be physicians to try and keep a lid on things and protect the student athletes or the athletes in that case. But at the high school level, not as necessary and a bit confusing when you're mixing the two different groups. The other thing that it did was once that official made the decision that, that athlete's showing signs and symptoms of concussion, then they're done for the day. And that's not a good thing. At the National Federation of High School, we put verbiage in the rule books back in 2010 regarding officials and concussion, and a huge emphasis was that the officials were looking for signs and symptoms of concussion and then sending them to the sideline where then they would be seen by a medical professional. I was told over and over and over by officials throughout the nation they did not want the responsibility of where they were essentially making the decision of, yeah, you've probably had a concussion, you're done for the day. It's a huge pressure to put on them and clearly not one that they should be expected to be putting up with. The other part of this is just to align what Max's law says, the OAR says, about who can allow athletes to return to play. So MDDO, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and psychologists. And that's all we're looking for with that little change is just, again, to align these laws. You know, one of the first in the nation to put Max's law. I think we've been pretty successful with it throughout the last 6 years. So really just trying to make this as aligned and less confusing as possible. I gave football as the example, probably not the best example because even more confusing, our parents, athletes, and officials with club soccer and school soccer, club volleyball and school volleyball, they're essentially playing under two different sets of rules at this point. So if as best as this committee can move forward in aligning that, I think everybody would benefit. And thank you, and we're open to questions if anyone so chooses.
Any questions for anyone? Seeing none, thank you both for being here.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
There is no one else signed up to testify on this bill, and so we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 521. We will be bringing that back for action at some point, and it's possible it even could be today. No, it won't be today. For students, if you saw a public hearing, if it doesn't say or possible work session, you cannot work the bill to pass it. So with that, we're going to skip a little bit on the agenda. We were going to have Senate Bill 218 next, but we have a number of students who wanted to testify, and there's a bus leaving shortly, and they would like to be on it. So we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 322 to take their testimony. So we're not going to have the order that we usually do. We're going to bring up Emma Brazell, Natalie Brandis, Evelyn Arvis. Avilas. So all three of you come on up and take a seat up here.
Mr. Chair.
And we're going to open a public hearing, on Senate Bill 322. Yes.
I just wanted to say thank you to the people in the overflow room that were willing to move to make room for all of the students to sit in here. So a lot of our education lobby is in the other room. Yeah. So thank you, other room.
And before they start, we're going to have a short explanation of the bill, and we'll have some more of that explanation later, but I think from our administrators, so people know what they're testifying for. So go ahead.
Certainly. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 322 establishes funding mechanisms for fifth-year high school programs in the state of Oregon. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. It may have a fiscal statement, but it has not yet been issued at this time. It may have a revenue impact, but the statement has not been issued at this time. We're considering multiple amendments to the bill. These should be posted online now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 322, I hope there is an amendment that replaces all of the original language. So I want to make sure that you address your comments to this. There's been a lot of attention paid to this bill by the proponents and the opponents. And the one thing that I've noticed is there is miles of common ground here, because essentially both sides are after the same thing, which is to find opportunities for our young people to get to the middle class. And that might be a technical training program at a community college. That might be 2 years of core classes to get a head start on a four-year degree. But we're all after the same thing. The fifth-year programs and sixth-year programs that have started in about 20 school districts around Oregon, while very well intended, will cost the state of Oregon about $19 million in this two-year budget cycle, according to the Department of Education. That's money that is coming from the K-12 fund. So by telling students to intentionally delay graduation, high school administrators are taking advantage of a loophole that is designed to help students who are in K-12 schools. If I was a superintendent, I probably would take advantage of that same loophole. But the problem is, if everybody takes advantage of the same loophole, the system will crash. And that's where we're at now. Senate Bill 322, with this -1 amendment, proposes a compromise. It will begin to phase out these programs to continue through 2018 without further straining the K-12 budget. It would cover a year of college courses for students. It would not interrupt programs that are all underway. And it will begin to utilize Pell Grant money for high school graduates. And that's really important, this federal Pell Grant money, because right now, on these fifth and sixth year programs, the state is paying 100% of these college costs. If we were to move to a community college program, U.S. Pell Grant money would pay probably 3/4 of the cost. But you can't get a Pell Grant unless you have a high school diploma. So Oregon is not playing smart for doing this. We want the same thing, but let's just do it right. If all districts did this, the system would crash. So there's a better way. I appreciate the conversations I've had with Corvallis and Dallas and Gaston and others that are doing this, and I do think that they're well-intended, good-hearted people. We're all after the same thing.
Okay. So with that introduction, whoever wants to go first? Or you can go by just the way I called it up. So Emma, you want to go first? Okay. That's brave of you.
Hello. Senator Roblin and other members of the committee. Hi, my name is Emma Brazell. I'm currently a senior at Crescent Valley High School. I'm a part of the Extended Options Program at my school, and I have applied to become a part of a member of the students who are going to be involved in the fifth-year program. Over these last 4 years, I have been involved in over 450 hours of volunteer work. I have done robotics, I've done theater, I have done numerous internship programs, both paid and non. And even though I've done all these things, it's been on the help of federal funding. One of the things that I've always been faced with is I do not have the funds. My family, or most other people in my family, do not have the funds to be able to send me through college. And if I were to go through college on my own, I would be in enormous debt. In modern day culture, it is not enough to just have no degree. It is not enough to just have your diploma. You need to have that degree and to be able to get a good job with a living wage that you can survive on. So this next year, I really hope that I can get into the fifth-year program, because this fifth-year program gives me an opportunity to be able to get at a higher chance of being able to succeed in my life, to be able to succeed in my goals for myself. My goal for myself, if I am accepted into this fifth-year program, is to be a part of a clinical laboratory sciences program after I transfer to Oregon Institute of Technology. I will be moving on to a four-year degree. While that may not be common of other fifth-year students, I do not have the funds currently to be able to go into a position that would allow me to survive off of what I have. So I need this fifth-year program to be able to continue on with my life and be able to become a better part of society and to become a better member of the community as a whole. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. We'll ask all of you together as we can. So, next, Natalie.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Natalie Brandis. The fifth year program is important for special education students such as me. Transitioning from high school to higher education, for many of us, the fifth year program provides an opportunity to continue working on necessary skills. I see the running start more than as a fifth year of high school. I see it as like a completed at a community college instead of at the high school. Special education students face many struggles to reach graduation. For example, the IEP process is pretty complex. Because of this, some students have really good IEPs and others do not. Some students have advocates to help the negativity the system, others do not. Students who are trying really hard to graduate may simply need more time to complete graduation requirements or necessary skills. Even though I reached my goal of meeting the requirements to graduate, my skills are still not at the college level. Corvallis Running Start program is giving me a chance to continue developing lifelong skills in math, reading, and writing. The Running Start program provides students who have been on an IEP a bridge between high school and college. In college, there's no formal IEP, but students receive a list of accommodations. Having counselors at both LBCC and the school district have helped me with the difficult transition. In my case, the Running Start program is about improving my skills from high school in math, reading, and writing, and helping me be successful in college next year.
Thank you very much. Well done. Evelyn.
Chairman, Roldman, and the members of the committee, my name is Evelyn Aviles, and I am currently a senior at South Albany High School, but also attending LBCC to finish my prerequisites to enter the dental assistant program next year. The fifth-year program is very important to me since it will give me the opportunity to start preparing for my career as a dental assistant. If it wasn't for this program, I probably never go to college because my family isn't financially stable to provide me to go to college. Being a first-generation college student, I have no idea what college is like, and I didn't know when to register or what to do when I got there. But having a person always there to guide me has been very helpful. Having this fifth-year program is very important to me and for the future generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this group? Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you all for coming, and I wanted to acknowledge especially Natalie. I think one of the barriers to college for students on IEPs has been the inaccessibility of federal financial aid. And Natalie really did a lot of work in telling her story, and it is because of Natalie that Oregon students can now access financial aid for college, and also that we have appropriate accommodations for our standardized tests. So for all of you that are here, it really makes a difference. And Natalie, you've made a difference for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and I'm really proud of you, and I hope you're proud of yourself too.
Thank you.
And no other questions? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So next we'll have Brian Sanchez, looks like Michael Bauer, and Georgia Dunn Hartman. Hope I got those right. Oh, it might be Michaela.
Yes,
Bauer.
It's Michaela.
Thanks. Come on up, Michaela. I read too fast. And we can go in that order if you want. Brian, you get to go first.
All right, so chairman and
committee members.
Committee members, I'm here to support the fifth-year program. Because,
and your name?
Oh, my name is Brian Sanchez. I attend South Albany High School. I currently go to LBCC, and I'm here to support the fifth-year program because I think it's very important for people, for students like us, to actually go to college, because a lot of people don't go to college because they have a financial problem, because their parents work minimum wage jobs, and they didn't have the time to go to college, or they didn't have money or anything like that, because they worked minimum wage and they couldn't afford it. So by having this fifth year program, I think it'd be a great opportunity for students. And yes, it would affect money-wise with the state, but in a couple of years, you guys could get that money back, because a lot of people really will be paying more taxes, and there will be, you guys will be wasting less money on welfare and stuff like that. So I think that's what I have to say about the fifth-year program.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, Michaela.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'm Michaela Bauer. I am a student at LBCC, and I'm also on the Beyond LHS program to complete my high school diploma. Ever since I was a small child, I struggled with math, because it was pure gibberish to me. And because of math, I was unable to graduate high school on time. And my relationship with math began when I was in sixth grade, and I had a very horrible teacher. And so it wasn't merely the fact that it was gibberish, but my relationship with math in general. And I am also been told that I am very creative, and I used my creativity to pursue theater because I was very good at it. And I actually wrote a play called You're Just a Number for my senior project, which was against the evils of standardized testing and the Common Core. Yes, I'm awesome. And the Beyond LHS program is very important to me because it helped me with the struggles. If you cut this program, people who have been in my shoes, and believe me, there have been many who have actually pondered the idea of suicide because they couldn't do math very well, because they thought it was supposed to be as simple as blinking. And if you think that I'm going to stand idly by while you accept the Common Core for your curriculum, but get rid of Beyond LHS, you are all sadly mistaken. Because frankly, it's illegal, the Common Core.
Thank you, Michaela. And Georgia.
Good afternoon, Chairman and other members of the committee. My name is Georgia Dunn Hartman. I am an LBCC journalism student, and I wouldn't be able to say that if it weren't for the fifth-year program. I heard about the Running Start program while I was a junior in CHS, and I was wondering, why isn't this in place in Benton County. So I talked to my counselors and other members who are involved in coordinating that. And eventually, the following year, it was in place. And although I didn't take advantage of it that following year due to choosing to really focus on extracurriculars, I saw so many members of my high school, like, flourish and find their way and see a different path that supports them. And but for me personally, it's given me the chance to be able to continue my education when realistically I wasn't able to, that it wasn't even in my mind that I would be furthering it. And it's given me a chance to practice other skills and be a part of a community. The community college aspect is really important because it does create a middle ground. It helps people find their way from high school into, first of all, finding out what they want to do without going into an extreme detrimental debt when they don't, by studying what they are not sure is actually going to help them succeed. And I just see that this is a very important program for creating a state that will run efficiently and sustainably and helping families, like, we're bridging a gap. And that's pretty much how I see this program. And it's very essential to the foundation of our future. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Just a comment, because I agree with Michaela on Common Core.
Thank you.
And I was wondering if it was possible. I would love to see a copy of your play, if that's possible to do. I would be very interested in that. I appreciate your talent.
If you give me your email, I will gladly send it to you.
Okay.
And we can get online. If you go to Senator Cruz at the Oregon Department, you'll find his deal. And he'll write it down for you, too. So we'll get that to you before you go. So thank you all for being here. And we'll bring up our next. Looks like Michelle Vermilia. I'm not sure I pronounced these names correctly. So if it sounds anything near your name, come on up. Maxtilla Palaiskas. How bad did I do that one, Malia? Maxtilla. And Anthony Ross. Thank you, Anthony.
Hello, Chairman and other chair members. My name is Michelle Vermilia. I am a senior at South Albany High School, and I am definitely for the fifth-year program. I have a three-month-old son, and if it weren't for the fifth-year program, I wouldn't be able to support him. I'm planning on going into a program, medical coding and billing, and that will help me support my son and my boyfriend and our family. So, thank you.
Thank you. Now I get to see how it's really pronounced.
Good afternoon, Chairman Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Mexley Palacios, and I am a senior at South Albany High School. This program is going to help me in the process of going to college and continuing my education to pursue my career as a neurosurgeon. I'm not the only one who will be benefiting from this program, for there are generations after me that are looking forward to it. It's not only for people who are lost in what they want to do as a career-wise, it's for people going through financial difficulties or who have academic difficulties or disabilities. Without this program, I don't know what I would do. My family is not financially stable to pay for college, and the fifth year program allows me to get an associate's degree in biology and then transfer to my dream school, Georgetown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Ross, and I am a junior and the current ASB president at South Albany High School. I myself was planning on benefiting from the fifth-year program. I come from a middle-class household. I get good grades. I'm very involved in my community. However, my family simply does not make enough money to send me to a four-year college that I would like to go to, without incurring punishing levels of debt upon myself, upon my future children, and upon my family as a whole. I'm in an interesting middle ground where I also am not poor enough to qualify for any sort of federal student aid. So basically, if I want to go to university, I have to do it on my own. I have to pay for it on my own, either through scholarships or through taking out loans. And the fifth-year program helps me with this. It allows me to get one foot in the door towards college without having to make that full financial commitment, which could prove ruinous to my future due to the debt that it incurs. And there are many kids in the community that I live in who are in the exact same position that I am in. And if you remove this program, you are also telling them that they have to suffer through this debt, which we've seen not just in our state, but in the entire country, is starting to pile up on top of people and makes it harder for them to succeed. This program can help people find their way. It's the resources that it provides, both through the school and through the community colleges, are invaluable. And I'd just like to say that there's a difference between a free education and a quality education. And the fifth-year program provides a quality education, not just a free one. The resources from the counselors at the high school and the counselors at, for instance, where I want to go, Lynn Benton Community College, help students succeed. And I think if you look at just the peer statistics, you will see several years down the road that the fifth-year program will help our students succeed more than just handing them a free bill to go to a community college. This is the right way to go about providing education, higher education, to our kids, and I hope that you will take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Hess.
Sir, I wouldn't ask you this question if I didn't think you could handle it.
Go right ahead.
We have the biggest budget in our state government is the K-12 budget from kindergarten through 12th grade.
Absolutely.
And right now there's a lot of pressure on it. We're hearing from people in all corners of the state to raise it because classrooms are so big in first grade classrooms in Portland to Albany. Do you think it's appropriate that we reach into that fund and use it to pay college tuition for others? When some parents think that it's unfair that their first graders are in classrooms with 35 people.
Senator, I believe that you're well aware of the term, you have to spend money to make money. And the benefits that you see from higher education further down the road will well more than outweigh the money that you will have to spend at first to pay for this program. So of course it's going to hurt at first. But down the road, you will see enormous benefits from this program.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
so
you.
That was the entire list of people from Albany. The entire list from the Albany who have to catch a bus before we get through with today. So is there anybody else that I missed that was on that bus?
Hold the bus, so we're okay.
Okay, we're okay now. Okay. So we're going to open a public hearing. We're going to go back to our regular order, so this shouldn't take too long, but we're going to open a public hearing. We'll leave this one open, and we'll come back to it. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 218. So with that, do you want to do a summary? And we'll have Dana Richardson come on up, and we do have an amendment on this one. Is there anybody else, Dana? Is Dana here?
She was outside a minute ago.
See if you can find Dana. Give a short explanation. We'll see if Dana's here.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 218 authorizes the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to charge out-of-state schools a fee of $7,000 for degree authorization and a fee of $1,000 for new program application. This bill has no subsequent referral by prior reference. We are considering the Dash 1 amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued for the Dash 1 amendments with a recommendation for a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, where the bill will receive further fiscal analysis. The Dash 1 amendments have no revenue impact.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I'm here to answer any questions about the Dash 1 amendments. They're intended to make sure that the statute isn't narrower than that's what's currently permitted in rule. So we remove language from the statute like the word internship, but really that makes it slightly broader because practicums aren't just internships. They're really any placement in Oregon. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm happy to answer any questions.
And we did have, I think, good clarification the first time we had this hearing about particular schools that may have other schools outside of the state, but the ones that reside here would not be a part of this. And I think, like some schools.
Medical school in Lebanon.
Yes, exactly.
You.
So we've made some of those things clear. And so is there any questions of Dana? Because if there is not, we'll probably move this bill to Ways and Means.
Let's do it.
Okay. So thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 218, and we're going to open a work session. So if for students who want to see how this all works, we had a public hearing before. We brought back some new information that makes it better. We now have the opportunity to actually work it. So we're going to open a work session, and that means that this bill moves out of our committee to someplace else. So with that, I would entertain a motion from our co-chair.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I wish Michaela was giving this because it would have much more passion behind it. But, Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -1 amendments as presented.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the -1 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? I got it this time. Seeing none. So moved.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 218 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 218 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Can we just be certain that when the bill does make it to the floor that carrier references that it doesn't cover
yes,
the medical school in Lebanon?
Yes, we can work on that.
Thank you.
And I will be on Ways and Means, so I'll make sure that we make that happen, too. Any other concerns? Is there any opposition to the bill moving on to Ways and Means? Seeing none, so ordered. So this bill is on its way, and we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 218. So as I said, it was quick. So now we're back to a public hearing that we've already opened on Senate Bill 322, and we will start out with Hilda Rosoli, Bran Reeder, and I'm not sure if Mary Alice Russell is here or not.
It's a video.
Okay.
Is Greg here?
Who else did you would like up?
Greg.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here.
Delighted to be here. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hilda Rosoli, and I serve as the Director for College of Career Readiness at the Oregon Education Investment Board. I've been asked to share background on the fifth-year programs and Senate Bill 322, as well as address some of the rationale behind the amendments. So what do we mean by fifth-year programs? I think it's important to put on the record we're talking about a program in which a student has satisfied the requirements for a diploma established by the State Board of Education under ORS 329-451. These students have not received a diploma, however. They remain enrolled at a school district. They attend a community college for at least half of their coursework, and they have some or all of their tuition, fees, and books for coursework at the community college paid for by the school district where the student is enrolled. In late 2013, Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden and former Governor John Kitzhaber convened a group of K-12 leaders and post-secondary leaders to discuss the benefits and unintended consequences of fifth-year programs and to try to develop potential solutions. I'd like to review, and you've heard some of this from the students who were able to join us today, what some of the benefits of the model are. One, high schools pay for the tuition and books for the first year of community college, which helps students out, making college more affordable and accessible, and students can earn an advanced diploma. Many of the fifth-year programs that we've looked at include counseling supports and advising. They reportedly have very good outcomes for some students of color and students from low-income backgrounds. They have reportedly improved graduation rates in the districts, and they can serve Pell dollars that eligible students might use if attending college after high school. However, we also uncovered a number of unintended consequences. School districts are using state school fund dollars to pay for the first year of college for students, and this is a means of using state school funds dollars in a way that was not originally intended. This is not financially sustainable if more and larger districts implement the model. Based on the current rate of use by 26 districts, it could dilute the state school fund by well over $18 million for a biennium. Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent of Research and Data Analysis at ODE, is here to provide you with more details on the available data. Also, we've learned that some districts extend this program beyond the fifth year, and that may or may not extend into the sixth, seventh, and we even found potentially eighth year, but that is still to be confirmed. We would like to clarify that we're not talking about students who are on IEPs still eligible for services, and we're not talking about students who are in a credit recovery program. These are students who have met all of the requirements for high school graduation. In addition, we have learned that although this program may be serving students for whom paying for college is outside of their reach, it probably is also serving students for whom college is within their reach. There doesn't seem to be parameters that limit the use of the program to only those students most in need. And also of interest is the fact that it uses state school funding in lieu of federal dollars, Pell Grants, that would typically help students who are eligible for Pell Grants during their first year. Data run for us by the Office of Student Access and Completion estimates that for 1,000 students, we're talking about close to $1.2 million. In short, many district leaders have shared with us how much they appreciate and like the fifth-year program, but many have also expressed the fact that they feel it is unethical to use the state school fund in ways it was not intended to be used. You have already received testimony from Matt Coleman, former assistant superintendent from Eugene School District 4J. You also will be hearing from Greg Bellell, school board member from Portland Public Schools, and there has been a video posted on the website from McMinnville School District, which really illustrates the kinds of efforts that some school districts are making to definitely ramp up and increase the number of college credits that students are able to earn while they are in the 4 years of high school. Initial language for Senate Bill 322 sought to honor the benefits that current fifth-year programs offer while limiting the amount that any student earns to $4,000 for those enrolling in at least 45 credits per year or prorated for less. An additional amount was suggested ranging from $500 to $1,000, which could be earned if the student earning the credit was an underserved student, as defined by the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission. And in addition, it even identified a potential of students earning a $50 credit for up to 45 credits from the state school fund, which would be held in an account administered by the Office of Student Access and Completion. However, the bill as originally drafted would not diminish the current fiscal impact on the state school fund, and in fact, it would likely result in very substantial losses to the K-12 budget once an official means was established for school districts to offer fifth-year programs. The Dash 1 amendments introduced a transition model that phases out the current practice over a period of 2 years and encourages districts using fifth-year programs to implement strategies that effectively leverage limited resources and provide services during the 4 years that students are enrolled in the high school. In addition, the amendment would continue to support students' opportunity to earn college credit while still working on a high school diploma. It would, however, limit the practice of withholding diplomas for the purpose of enrolling students in college to the first 4 years of high school, with exceptions for those students who need more time, such as those on an IEP or in a credit recovery program. If a student has not earned a high school diploma in 4 years, then state school funds used in the fifth year would be limited to credit recovery required to graduate from high school. And if students are earning college credit in the fifth year, they would not qualify for state school formula funding for the fifth year. As was mentioned, there are additional amendments that have been posted, including a transition plan that would delay the implementation of this in consideration of students who may be signed up now for the 2015-16 school year. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Brian Reeder.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent in the Office of Research and Data Analysis at the Department of Education. I just want to step you through the data that we do have right now. It's pretty limited, but we do have some data that I think sheds some light on this. Just a little background. I think We first heard about fifth-year programs 4 or 5 years ago, and they began growing fairly rapidly. And we decided at the department that we needed to get a better handle on how many students and which districts were taking advantage of that, because in our current data collections, it was not clear who those students were. We couldn't identify them positively. So we've put in place a new code in our data set that where districts identify those students who are, at the end of each school year, students who are intending to go into the fifth-year program the following year. And we require that districts give us that data at the end of this current school year, 14-15. But what has happened is that 26 districts started using that code last year at the end of, so we got data at the end of last year. And those are the data that were provided to you. 1,201 students in those 26 districts who were in what we're calling fifth-year programs, but some of them are staying in those programs for more than 1 year after they've earned their high school diploma. We see evidence of a number of students staying for a sixth and even a seventh year and still getting funding through the state school fund as high school students. So I went through the data, and we have data on individual students who are identified in those programs, and made some estimates of both the number of students, or ADM, and the number of weighted students that implies, and then put a dollar amount on it. And that's where the roughly $9.5 million per year, or $19 million per biennium, came from. I would say, though, that because these data are from a year before this coding was actually required, we think it's an undercount of the students who, or the districts who, are actually using these fifth-year programs. And some of the additional information that we provided identifies other districts who may be using the program, and we do that by looking at students who were scheduled to graduate from high school in a given year, and then look to see if they were still enrolled at the end of the following year. We think some of those students will be fifth-year students who've already earned their or completed their diploma requirements, but not all of them. So my best estimate is that there are between 1,400 and 1,500 students right now in fifth-year programs. So we're talking about, probably in round numbers, $10 million a year or $20 million a biennium going to districts on behalf of those students. We've broken it down by various characteristics, by ethnicity, by gender, by whether students are qualified for free and reduced lunch, and also by tag status. And I won't go through those numbers. Those are available on OLIS for you to look at.
Question? Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, can you tell me a little bit about how the estimates were run? I had asked for these numbers from the Corvallis School District earlier this week, and the number that I got from them was that they received 22.98 ADMW for a total of $156,172, but this spreadsheet shows 79.02 ADMW for a total of $542,955. Do you know what that discrepancy might be, and are we sure these numbers in the spreadsheet are right?
Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, these data are those students identified by Corvallis School District as participating in fifth year. So they are the data that we received from the school district. I certainly can double check them, but the data we have comes directly from the school district.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When asking the question, this is kind of a whole number, and the description that came to me was that a fifth of the students that are participating, that are kind of identified as kids in the fifth-year program, are still juniors or seniors in high school, part of that total number. So the number of kids that haven't actually completed 4 years of high school
that have completed 4 years of high school that are truly in a fifth year is smaller than that total number of kids that might be participating in the program. And I'm just wondering if there's a way to go back and look at the data to pull that out, because a student that has only completed 3 years of high school or is in their fourth year of high school, that's not additional revenue that's coming to the district. Those are kids that are entitled to their full 4 years in high school. And it looks like that amount is included in these estimates. And when the difference is by order of fivefold, it seems like that, if you apply that across the state, that's a pretty significant number. If you're looking at a $10 million question, you might be looking at a $2 million question instead.
Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, the instructions in our data documentation were very clear to use this code only for students who have already completed their diploma requirements. So if Corvallis School District identified juniors and seniors who have not yet completed their diploma requirements but maybe in the future intend to be fifth-year students, then they've made an error in their data submission. We certainly can follow up with them to verify that, whether they've done that or not.
Thank you. And I'll double-check with the other districts in my area just to see how the numbers match up. Thank you.
We'll go ahead and then we'll ask questions.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Greg Belisle, and I'm a member of the Portland Public Schools Board of Education. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I thank you for considering this bill as amended. I want to start for thanking you to consider how we're paying for access to post-secondary education to make sure our students are college and career ready, and to discuss the implications of the current funding strategy to provide that access. In PPS, we're committed to supporting our students' successful transition to post-secondary options, as are most districts, perhaps all districts, really. These include dual-credit high school courses as well as programs like Aspire. We've built partnerships with our community college, such as Future Connect, which is targeted toward low-income or first-generation college students for their families. This is to say we support students gaining college credit while in high school and using effective strategies that support students, especially those who are underrepresented in post-secondary programs and have historically been underserved. We have worked to make that an option for our students. Technology never quite goes the way I want it to. For our students who have not yet completed the state's graduation requirements. As the affordability of college is becoming increasingly difficult for students and families, as we heard today, it is important to increase access for post-secondary options and transition support. However, holding students after they have met graduation requirements and using K-12 funding for post-secondary enrollment is not a sustainable solution for our state. If more districts were to adopt this model of holding students, as we have heard today, who have met graduation requirements for additional years as they enroll in post-secondary, it would further dilute the funding appropriated to fund K-12 education by artificially inflating the number of students in the K-12 system while the funding is actually paying for post-secondary. Currently, as you've heard, ODE estimates K-12 funding is being diluted by about $9.5 million per year. If PPS alone decided to participate in this funding model, just assuming 5% of our students participate, we'd further dilute K-12 funding by well over $1 million per year. If Beaverton joined Portland in this college access strategy, the K-12 budget would be diluted by an additional $4.5 million each biennium. This is valuable funding that is being repurposed from its intended use. The issues of access, transitions, and support in post-secondary are not a rural, urban, or large district, small district issue. Neither are concerns about workforce training and economics. Students and committees across Oregon struggle with these issues, and districts work to support them. Providing opportunity for students to earn college credit while in high school is a good idea and an effective strategy for some students. Holding students after meeting graduation requirements to use the funding for post-secondary enrollment, while creative, adversely affects funding across the state for all students. If post-secondary affordability is a priority for our great state, funding should be allocated directly and outside of the K-12 budget. It seems reasonable to provide a phase-out plan as proposed in the amendment that allows districts to transition from this practice, and if there's a desire to fund first or second year options for students, please consider creating a program and funding it explicitly. Thank you.
Senator Hess.
Thank you.
In closing, I just wanted to address the fact that when we looked across some other states at models, the Running Start program in Washington is limited to high school students, and in Colorado, as is noted on your testimony, they actually have a separate appropriation just for this for the fifth year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One, I think, to the department on the when we first started writing this bill, I was wondering what the authority of the superintendent or deputy superintendent is. I was surprised we needed a law. I thought that the department or the superintendent or deputy superintendent could just say, hey, this isn't appropriate, this isn't sustainable, knock it off, or words to that effect. Is a law the only way we can fix this?
Chair Roblin, Senator Hass, in statute currently it reads that students are entitled to a free public education if they haven't reached their 19th birthday before the start of the school year, and school districts may serve the student until the age of 21 if the student has not yet received their diploma, or words to the to that effect. So that I believe that is the piece of the law that has been referred to as the loophole. If students don't actually receive their diploma, then the district may allow them to continue in the K-12 system until they receive their high school diploma. So I would say yes.
I'm going to ask a clarifying. We also have a statute that allows for different kinds of diplomas, correct? So one an accelerated diploma could have more requirements than would have in a regular diploma. And so if you couple the two, you've got they're not getting their diploma because they're applying for an advanced diploma, which they haven't met the requirements of, and therefore they don't get their regular diploma, even though they've met the minimum requirements for getting a diploma. Isn't that also true?
Chair Roblin, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I when you're collecting this data and doing your research on these 26 districts, did you see any common thread of accountability? In other words, was there one set way to look at, okay, this is the criteria you must achieve, or here's the outcome, or here are the classes you may take, and here's those you may not take, and here's what happens if you don't keep up your grades? And was there a common, any kind of accountability measure that you saw consistent?
Chair Roblin, Senator Hass, so far the department's data collection has simply been to identify those students. We have not collected any information on criteria at the district level for students in those programs. So we don't know how that may vary across districts or what those criteria might be at this point.
My only question is, right now we are funding community colleges at a certain rate. Do they get that money along with the school district money? And I guess the second part of that question is the average daily the amount we give per student at K-12, is that greater than or equal to our community college tuition and books for a year? Do you have any idea on those questions?
Chair Roblin, that's an excellent question. I think you have in the audience some folks who could probably answer that very specifically for Lynn Benton Community College. But I do believe that most cases you're going to be able to think about the fact that there's a latitude right now in terms of some districts paying tuition, some districts paying tuition and fees, some districts paying tuition, fees, and books. And that can add up to an amount. I've heard estimates somewhere around 5,000, but we haven't had any means of actually documenting that specifically.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. So with that, we're going to go a little bit out of the order that I had because we have a representative here. So a representative, you want to come up, and we'll have Aaron Prince come as well. That was the request. We can also have Rob, do you want to come up too?
You guys go first.
Okay.
wants to go first, so we'll let our...
I'll defer to the
okay.
My esteemed colleagues here.
I just don't want to stop you from getting back to what you need to do as well. So.
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for taking time to really talk about this. This is a really important subject to all of us. My name is Rob Hess, superintendent of Lebanon Community Schools. And, you know, I want to just reiterate that what Senator Hess opened the hearing with is that we all want the same thing. And I really believe that working together, we can get there, because what we want to do is create access and opportunities for kids. And we weren't invited to any of those meetings where they talked about how these programs work. The people have been doing them a long time. So I think we can add some education to how they operate and the systems. It'll just take time and communication. But first of all, I do want to say that no one found a loophole. No one is holding diplomas. No one is stealing money from the K-12 fund. These programs began 12 years ago when this building passed expanded options that was designed to... some of you may have voted for it. That was designed to recapture dropouts, prevent dropouts, and help at-risk kids have access to college. And that's what these programs do, and that's why they work, and that's why people are so passionate about them. And so do they thin the soup in funding? Yes, they do. Do they make our pie a little smaller? Yes, they do. If more districts did them, would the pie get even smaller? Yes, it would. And so... It's an issue for us for the future, and I think it's important for us to see if we can figure out some creative ways to increase the state school fund. That's really what this problem is all about, and there are some ways out there. Senate Bill 898 that Senator Roblin has and Senator Canope have co-sponsored would add some innovation funding additional to the state school fund that districts could use as a menu option. And if people wanted to fund fifth-year programs, they could do it through that. And then you'd have more data about how it's working and how it's helping kids. So that's one option. Another option, Senator Hass has a bill of free community college tuition, and that's a great idea. Let's amend that bill and include a way to have fifth-year programs in some form and fashion, because what makes these programs work for kids is the relationship and the bridge and the communication and the support for the kids who need it. Not every student needs it, but you've met some today who do need it and who wouldn't be going to college if they didn't have that support. It's very effective and efficient money. So that so those are just a couple of ideas. But I know that it's your job as leaders to help increase and get more funding for public schools. I know that's the heart of each of you. We've talked with you. And it's my job to help kids in my community get access to college and achieve their dreams. And so we're going to keep on working on that, and we'll be more than happy to help in any way that you'd like us to help. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Dr. Erin Prince, and I have the privilege of serving as superintendent of Corvallis School District. Thank you for hearing us today.
You can move it back a ways. It's really,
I'm yelling.
No, it's very sensitive. So.
Perfect. Corvallis is in its second year with Running Start, our fifth-year program. Our graduation rates jumped, literally jumped, from 72% to 84% just last year, when our fifth-year program began. This is not by chance, definitely not incremental. These rates are transformational, and Running Start is the catalyst. 2 years ago at College Hill, our Corvallis Alternative High School, 0% of our seniors went on to college. Out of this year's seniors, 50% are committed to attend college through our fifth-year program. Our region's retention rate for students attending the second year of college is at 71% and above, well above the state's average. And this does not even count the students who receive their certificate in their first year and successfully go on into the workforce with a specific skill, such as certified nursing assistant, welding, electrician. Unlike other college credit programs, our programs are unique in that they support our students with the bridge from high school to college taking place on the college campus. That is the difference. Not every student is ready to take college credit at the high school. This is the bridge. This helps our student gain confidence and the support to navigate this critical transition. Our students primarily are students of color, English language learners, students with disabilities, and students in poverty. Many are first-generation high school graduates and first-generation college attenders. Is this not what 40-40-20 is asking of us? Is this not the right focus for our educational system? Absolutely, it is. We understand, as Rob Hess said, the funding model needs to look different. But don't cut or phase out the programs that are successful. Let's collaborate in creating a model that uses the best of what is working and getting results with the potential for scalability and sustainability for the state. Kill the bill before it eliminates the dreams and the opportunities and the hopes of all of the students and the successful future of the kids, and you heard from a great many of them. Thank you for your time. We're committed to each and every student and not in widening the gaps of the haves and the have-nots.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, at the risk of duplicating everybody's testimony, I will continue. I understand the
name.
My name is Dan Rayfield. I'm the state representative for House District 16, which includes Corvallis, Philomath, and Oregon State University. I understand the intent of this bill, and it makes sense. However, this bill is going to kill a very impactful program in our community. And this is an impact that a lot of us are trying to achieve across the state, and we've found something that is very successful. And as we look at this, I think that this is something that we should not look to get rid of, but we should actually be looking to expand this as we go forward. And if you take a step back and you remember when you first went to college, when you were 18, that was an intimidating thing to do, to go away from your family, to whether it was a four-year institution or even a two-year institution, extremely intimidating. And for most of us, we had a family where my father went to college. And so I had some help from my family to kind of bridge that gap as I went in there, a support network, if you will. This program creates a transition for these folks that otherwise, unlike myself, didn't have a transition. And that's something we need to look at, and it's something that is getting results, and we need to look at how do we expand this. And that's what I want you guys to think about as you're moving forward. And I also want to applaud the folks that have come and found a very creative solution, and to the courage of the students that took time out of their day today to tell you about it. Without this program, they wouldn't be here today and learning about this process and wouldn't have achieved some of these real results that Aaron Prince was talking to you about earlier today. So I would urge us to try and look at ways to expand this, try and move forward, or look at ways to make this a pilot program so that we can learn from it and start moving it into other areas. So, and I would like to be involved in that conversation as well. So thank you.
Sir. Senator Gelser, I get that right now. I'll get all the way through our relationship.
My Senator Gelser.
I answered pretty much anything.
Yes, you are Senator. Yeah, yeah.
Not quite anything.
Not to you, Senator Cruz. Aaron, could you, because I think it's worth repeating one more time, could you repeat the change in your high school graduation statistics and your college going statistics one more time, please?
So 2 years ago, our four-year cohort rate was 68%. That was 2 years ago in Corvallis. This is a college community. Quite dramatically, the year later was 72%. We put Running Start in place last year, and we propelled ourselves to 84. So within 2 years, from 68% to 84% four-year cohort, our fifth-year completers even higher.
And Mr. Chair, follow-up? And can you, because I sat in your office and you walked me through this data, can you talk about who those kids are? Is that all kids that always do well anyway?
Those are kids that would have dropped out. We brought back many of the students, gave them the hope, gave them the confidence that we were going to support them, bar none, to succeed and get the education that they needed beyond high school. And this was the bridge that helped do that.
And one further follow-up. I have just been so impressed with the progress that's been made in the district with this initiative and a number of others, and the constant focus on kids that we aren't serving. And I
I agree with some of the comments that were made earlier, that there's a lot of common ground. And I think the students who talked about the unaffordability of college, I mean, that is the work that Senator Haas has been doing. How do we make sure that everybody is able to reach up to the middle class and be able to afford college? And I'm really grateful for that work. In the conversations around the state, there's another word that I've heard a lot, though, and it's the word unethical. And I take exception to that idea for our community. I just don't see anything unethical about increasing by double digits high school graduation rates, by taking from 0% to 50% the number of kids that go to college and what that's going to change for the rest of their lives. There is nothing unethical about that. I think that's a model behavior and creativity, innovation, and it's good for kids. And for me, ultimately, if we're doing what's right for kids, it's the right thing to do, and it's not unethical.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Aaron. I hesitate to ask this question because it's these kinds of questions that do get me in trouble quite a bit. So we have this school budget on the table here, ready to go, and it's about $7.2 billion. And all of us up here are getting besieged by educators and superintendents saying it's inadequate. And I'm just wondering if you're one of those superintendents who think that we need to put more money into that K-12 budget.
Absolutely. I, too, have first-grade classrooms that are 29-plus. And as we spoke prior, if we were to take this money and weigh it with no expansion, two additional students in a first-grade classroom versus capturing these students behind me and giving them hope and bringing them back and recapturing those graduation rates, I will go with this program, bar none. And our community would stand up and support that. But the question is, I hope that the budget is not ready to go at 7.235 because that is inadequate, and we will be making cuts in Corvallis, and it won't be Running Start. My board of seven supports this. Our kids, we support it. We're seeing huge gains in graduation rates. We're recapturing our students. We're making sure they're successful. So don't kill something that is showing great promise. Let's just get the funding right, and let's get to the table together.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'd like to answer that same question if I could. In Lebanon, we've been doing full-day kindergarten out of the general fund for all our kids for 6 years now. And we did it when we weren't getting paid because it was the right thing to do for kids. If you guys say you can't do this program anymore, but the law still allows us to do it, we will still do Beyond LHS because it's the right thing to do for kids. And that's where we have to hang our hat, is what is the right thing to do. And when 26 districts do something, it's not unethical, okay? There's a way to do it, and people are doing it. And it's let's learn from it, let's grow, let's get better. The state school fund is totally inadequate. You know, we are on a 25-year losing streak when it comes to funding public education in this state. We're racing to the bottom. No matter what report you look at, we're 46, we're 49th. If we do 7.2, we'll be 50th, dead last. We have to fix it. It's going to take us 10 years, five bienniums, but we can if we're committed to public education and growing the economy of our state and our future for kids. Thank you.
So I have to do this just because, unlike some people, math was the thing that saved me in school. So I actually liked math. And so when I hear the graduation rates, the only concern I have is that if you put a fifth-year program in and you then don't let 84 kids not graduate because they're going to go on to the college, that would affect your graduation rate. It would lower it. And then the next year when they do graduate, they would go back up. So is there an issue with regard to how you figured out your graduation rates based on the kids that were not graduated because they –
Right. They
program.
Changed the calculations this year, so the four-year cohort includes our fifth-year students that are going on. And so we calculated it both ways. And if we had not included or captured them into our graduation rates, it would have been 82%, not 84%. Okay. So still quite a huge transformational
that's
jump.
That's good to know. I couldn't help myself with that. Yes.
A little bit of a frustration here, Mr. Chair, because quite honestly, I feel that the K-12 number that's being commented on at this point in time is a number for political reasons and not a whole lot else, and it won't be the final number, and we know that, but the politics in this building get in the way of education every time we go through this. But I would also suggest that to say that this program, the impact on the formula may actually be true, but then you got to look at what the governor did in his budget with all of the bells and whistles he put into early education that could go into the formula. And quite honestly, I'm not willing to sacrifice a 15-year-old for a new program for a 3-year-old. I just don't think that's the way we should be going. So hopefully sanity and reason will show up in this building at some point before we're done.
Senator Knope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the bill. So, and he was looking at me when he said, talked about an education number, and I'm at $8 billion. Superintendent Prince, you indicated that your graduation rate is 84%. How, if you continue with the program, how much further or higher do you think you could go in terms of your graduation rates before you would stall out?
Which student behind me would you choose not to graduate? I will not be satisfied until 100% of our students cross that stage and I get to shake their hands, because that's what public education is about. We can't give up on anybody. And if we eliminate this or phase it out, we're giving up on our students, and I'm not willing to do that.
Follow up.
I think it was mentioned earlier that, you know, you've had great success with this, and it sounded like when I talked with you that you've had great success with minority students and bringing minority students back through and getting them to graduate. Can you speak to that? I was obviously out of the room for a little bit, so I don't know if you covered that, but I just wanted to make sure that point was made.
You know, primarily what we're trying to recapture are students that have become disengaged, or they do not have the skills or the support to navigate the system that we have set up for them over decades and decades and centuries in our educational system. And so we are reaching out for students, especially with disabilities, students of color, students who speak English as a second language, as our primary students for this program, because that is the population that will end up losing hope or losing their way, because they need that extra support. And that's what's unique about this program, not a free education for everybody. It's how do we bridge that support with the relationship power to help them navigate and see themselves as college goers.
Senator Hess.
Thanks. As long as we're freewheeling here, let me turn the tables here. I agree that these 50-year programs are very beneficial to those who participate. If they're so good, let's do it. Let's 198 school districts.
Yes.
But if Portland and Beaverton do that,
yes,
it will dilute the system so much through the formula that the first grade class that you just spoke of won't have 29 kids in the classroom. It may have 35.
That's right.
Have 38.
Let's refund it.
And so you're setting a priority. You're saying that those college courses are a higher priority than smaller classrooms in primary grades. And there are people, educators here, who will violently disagree with that.
I think you hit on the point that this is scalable, and I think when we were meeting yesterday, you said, what if Portland? We said, what if they did, right? If Portland got the same results that we've gotten in a year or two by supporting the fifth-year programs, then how could we not do this? It's the funding model currently, and so I think we get the experts in the room. We start talking about how do we fund this differently and capture what's going well currently and start to scale it.
Then this is, if I can follow up, Mr. Chairman, this gets us full circle. If all of the districts did it, it would add tens of millions of dollars in cost to the K-12 fund, and the state would pay 100% of that. There would be no federal money available, which is unnecessary, and I don't think that's playing smart. Why not let the federal government, would be willing to pay 3/4 of this cost in a different model than your model?
Yeah. Chair Roblin, in response to that, I would just like to say we don't have all the answers right now. We know that we can get better, though, as a state. And so we want to help. We want to help solve it. We want to help solve this problem. We've learned things that work, and they can scale in some form or fashion. Let's combine it with the federal money. Let's combine it with what we know about research. We know that the most effective way to improve student learning outcomes is when students own their learning. And these programs help kids to own their learning. And actually, student ownership of learning is more effective as a strategy than lowering class size. I mean, there's hard research behind that. I'm not making that up. So these programs work. Let's figure out ways that other people can do them. Obviously, we've got 26 different districts doing it. And I would say just about everyone is doing to some degree, but not as full-blown programs. So it's simply a matter of learning from where we've been and having a vision about getting better.
You know, and I would just add that, I mean, our superintendents have done their job. And at this point, okay, it's the legislature's job to figure out how to fund successful programs that are impacting our students. And I think the burden is upon us to do that.
Senator Cruz. We have 22 more people that want to speak in the
minute. Just one more comment, and then I'll try to be quiet. In response to Senator Haas, who's Mark and I, we've done some great things over the years. But if I have a choice between finding a way to draw down federal funds or get kids to graduate, I'll take graduation.
No more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we do have 22 more people and 15 minutes. So we are going to put a timer on here pretty soon. So the next group, it'll be 2 minutes. And it goes to a red, and that's when your time should be up. Most of the students have been very good at keeping their time limit, so I give them a lot of credit for that. It is the adults that spend more time talking. So with that, we will finish with a few more of the adults that have done it, and there's a whole bunch of kids. And with a public hearing, the whole committee doesn't have to stay here. We don't have a committee coming in after this, so I might stay and take some of that testimony to see if we can get through. But keep it as close as you can to a short time. So with that, we are going to start with Maria Deliper. I don't know if I said that right, Maria, but Kristen Adams and Gary Temple. And I think we'll put you on the timer, so keep it as long as you can.
Okay.
Sorry about that. We'll give you a little bit of smudging room, but
okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak to you today about this important topic. My name is Maria Deliper. I'm superintendent of the Albany School District. I believe we have the same goal of wanting our students to receive further training or education after they graduate from high school so that they can reach their full potential and become productive citizens of our communities. Albany's advanced diploma program enables more students to achieve their goal. This goal, especially students who struggle with navigating our often complex and confusing systems for enrolling in higher education. We have a full-time teacher who is assigned to work with our students to explain the program to kids and families and what it takes to be eligible, and we do have criteria, help them enroll in the program and meet all the required deadlines for paperwork, set goals with students, and develop a plan of coursework to accomplish these goals, counsel students who struggle and help them figure out a way to make it work, and a lot of them are working, monitor their attendance and grades and assign tutoring sessions as needed, require regular meetings with advisors to understand the expectations, and provide the support and encouragement until they are ready to be independent. These are not students who typically earn lots of college credits within the 4 years of high school because they need this time to complete the graduation requirements. Many are the first in their families to go beyond high school. Many are Latino students or economically disadvantaged. Many students in Albany are those who are interested in careers in the trades and have taken career and technical education classes in high school. They are an untapped resource of future taxpayers who can get the training and education to qualify for family wage jobs. Our unemployment rate in Linn County is 7.6%, while Oregon's is 5.8%, and our local industry have positions that are going unfilled. We have worked for 2 years to assign curriculum at high school and align curriculum at high school and LBCC to meet the needs of our local industry has for workers, and often they will provide for additional training.
2 minutes goes by quickly,
yes.
So kind of wind
thank
up.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. That was very nice. Thank you.
Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Kristen Adams, and I am a college access advisor at the Sweet Home School District. I currently oversee our fifth-year program. And I think what I would like to bring to the table today is this question on equity and fairness. When I think of public education, I look at three areas of equity. You have equity of investment, you have equity of resources, and you have equity of outcomes. And we all know that the state school funding right now, we already have set into our calculation inequity in what we give school districts of poverty versus school districts with high minority students. The equity on resources, if you want to compare my rural district to somebody such as in Portland or Beaverton, my elementary school has 1-to-27 ratio. In the Beaverton school districts, you may have 1-to-34 ratio. You also have 33 elementary schools, and every single one of those elementary schools has a PE teacher, a music teacher, a counselor, a school psychologist, a school nurse, a speech pathologist, and a technology instructor. Every 33, and those are standalone resources. Those are not shared resources. My elementary schools have zero. The high schools in the urban population and urban districts, actually, the students can go through high school and earn 1 year of free education because of the international baccalaureate programs, the AP courses. In the Beaverton area, there's a School of Science and Technology, Arts and Communication, School of Health and Science School. My district has 2 AP classes and a handful of 2-on-2 credits. So the last one is equity of outcomes. In the Beaverton School District, the average graduating class sends 73% of their students to community college and 4 universities. Sweet Home has 48. I don't feel like I'm robbing the K-12 funding. I feel like I'm leveling the playing field. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Gary Temple. I'm the superintendent of Scioto School District. What I need you to know is these programs were not developed in a vacuum. 10 years ago, we were firing a high school teacher every year for 6 years. My seniors started going 6 periods a day, and then it was 5 periods a day, and then it was juniors, and then it was walking sophomores, to the point where kids, good kids, were going a half a day and taking time off, thinking that that's what you're going to make them successful in the future. We decided that if more was not the answer, what could we, or less was not the answer, what could we get to more? We met with ODE, and we presented what we wanted to do. We met several times, and what they told us was bring us a framework. And so we did. And when I came to them and talked, they would bring in people into the room to hear what we were doing with our kids. Because of that work, we were selected as one of the promising schools in Oregon and got to do a lot of work with Bill Daggett's group. We were also the centerpiece of this OSU study that was about Big Here and Long Now, innovative thinking in Oregon high schools. We've presented to the House Education Committee twice in 2 different sessions. When we started, our college graduation rate was 12%. How do you get a non-college-going culture to become college-going and be successful? And we did it with this program. And I think the statistics speak for itself. But I would also tell you that it's not just about getting people to middle class. It's about keeping middle class middle class. And I think we heard from one student that said they're not eligible for all the things that everyone else might be. So if I were to bring you a program and told you that for every dollar you invested, you got $4 back. And for every dollar the education budget invested, they got $2 back. Would you give me the buck? Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hatch.
Yes. Senator Hatch, thank you. Question for Albany. How does it work at your school? Do you contract with the community college? Do you pay them? Do you give, some districts give checks to students? How do you do it?
No, ours directly goes to the community college to pay for the tuition and the books and the student fees.
100% of it?
Then, and to cover the cost of the full-time teacher that we have that monitors the program.
How much, what percentage does the district keep then?
I think that we could probably operate at about the same percentage as the original bill was recommending, which was a reduced, a little less, like 0.75% of the state school fund per ADM. We would not need the full amount.
As much, you wouldn't need as much as you're getting now?
Correct.
So, but, so right now, in the absence of a law, how much does the district keep, and how much goes to the community college per student? On a percentage basis?
I would say 20% the district is keeping currently.
And that's for what?
For other college, courses. Sometimes we don't have as much funding to pay for the expanded options credits that students access for while they're still technically juniors and seniors.
So are you saying that you're helping this student obtain some college credit, but you're also keeping money that helps you subsidize other operations?
Well, the operations are for students to get additional college credits while they're still within the 4 years of high school in the expanded options or extended campus programs. And we would love to be able to spend time trying to resolve some of those issues. I think what we're asking for is time to figure out how best and in the fairest manner to continue the programs.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you all.
Yep.
So next we have Greg Hammond, and then over here, Brian Green and Nick Bradford. And while they're coming up, I will tell you that, just so you, anybody that's here that's a student, if you were in the Senate watching a bill go through and there was a discussion, they would not appreciate it if you clapped. We keep it very quiet in the deal, and even in these rooms, we generally don't do that, so that people can move from one to the other without the taking extra time. I just mentioned that. So with that, let's keep going.
Hi, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Raina Schaefer. I'm from the Dallas School District. I was fortunate enough to be part of the extended campus for 2 years after I had completed my 4 years of requirements in 2012. I am the first person in my family to go to college and get a degree, so an extended campus made it really easy, that bridge. It made it really understandable. There was not a lot of hoops to jump through. So I am 20, and I have 2 certifications and a degree as of the end of spring term. And I also have no debt. I don't know anybody else who can say that. Being in extended campus put me in an environment where people pushed me to do what I wanted. It introduced me to Chemeketa's medical assisting program. So for there, I got my medical assisting and phlebotomy degree, and I now work at the St. Anne Hospital in Staten. I'm a phlebotomist out there, and I love it, and that would have never happened without the help of Brian Green, so thank you.
It was a program.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Senator Roblin and committee members, my name is Brian Green. I'm administrator at Dallas High School, and I'd like to thank you for the time letting me discuss Senate Bill 322 and the impact it will have on Dallas High School students. We're one of the trailblazers. We've had this program going on for about 10 years. Let me first start by saying that our fifth-year program not only complements the 40-40-20 goals for Oregon students, but we have supporting data that demonstrates the high rate of success for students who have participated in Dallas High School's extended campus. We also provided a seamless link between K-12 and higher education. One of the primary goals of this program is not only to provide a smooth transition between high school and college, but to increase the number of high school students going to college. I think we've been successful in that respect. I want to share just a couple of pieces of data with you. Our retention rate for college right now for people that stay in the program for the duration of the 10 years is 79.13%, just a little under 80%, far exceeds the state average. I'm real proud of that number. In the 10 years that we've had our extended campus program, we've had 472 students that have participated. Another number that's very important to me is 130. 130 of those 472 are first-generation college attenders. And coming from a town that was relying upon timber revenues in years past, to where we've had to find ways to be creative to provide the same programs that we've lost, that's huge. These students are trailblazers for their future posterity so that they can be able to change the future for their kids and their family. Also, our fifth-year graduation rate, cohort graduation rate, is 87%, which I think is very admirable. The extended campus for us also provides some leverage for students so that it really motivates students not to have an easy senior year because they know the requirements are rigorous, that they need to have rigor their senior year to provide them for college. So in closing, what I'd like to say is that the impact of dismantling the fifth-year program would be a devastating blow to Dallas High School. We would not be able to compete with our neighbors at West Salem or McMinnville for the programs that those students have because we just don't have them. So I would urge the committee to reconsider and to join us, those that have a proven program, so that we can work for a collective solution. I'm confident that there's a better solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, and our own Senator Sarah Gelser. For the record, I'm Greg Heyman, I'm the president of Lynn Benton Community College. I'm also commissioner on the Oregon Quality Education Commission. And perhaps more importantly, I am the chair of the Boys and Girls Club of Corvallis. A number of our students were here and may still be here behind us. And I see those same students going through the high school, through the Boys and Girls Club, and then coming to Lynn Benton Community College. And one of the reasons they are able to do that is because of our fifth-year program. The Oregonian editorial titled Rating K-12 Funding in Order to Fund Post-Secondary Education, I'd like to suggest that that's not only the wrong answer, but it's answering the wrong question. 7 years ago, when we started this conversation about reforming education around a student pathway, we were encouraged to quit thinking about the silos of funding and thinking about whether or not we're actually achieving effective outcomes for our students. And we were encouraged to think about the ways in which we could commingle funds in order to achieve success that we were not able to achieve on our own. I believe that commingling is part of what creates the innovation and creativity that actually produces student success. And I think these fifth-year programs are examples of that. It isn't just about money. It's about the kind of support that occurs when a school district and a community college both at the same time believe that that student is theirs, not someone else's. We own these students together, and we're committed to their success, and we're achieving that success. And because of that reason, we do understand there are challenges with this program, and so all we're asking is that we set this aside and create the capacity to have a policy-level conversation around how we can scale this program because we believe it can be successful across the state. Thank you.
My name is Nick Bradford, and I am a current member in the Dallas's fifth-year program. I have been in this program for about a little over 6 months, and the lift of financial burden has greatly impacted me because I am now able to look to excel in every angle that I can in more communities that I'm allowed to go into, and my grades have drastically improved from high school, and this program allowed me to fit into an area that I would normally have not been able to go into. And I would like this program to continue going so that people may see this program as what it is and follow the path that I have followed into a greater education. Thank you.
Thank you. I have just a question, because they said that we would have some community college people to kind of ask a question. My concern, and this is to you, Greg, I understand that the K-12 system is putting extra money into the community college system, but is the community college system giving anything? They're hiring a counselor to do something. They're doing all this other kind of stuff. I have a few community colleges in my area who waive tuition for kids because they work it out, but I'm hearing this system is give the community colleges everything and the kid, but you guys join in sharing the child. I mean, I really like that way of saying it. But are you adding value to the system as opposed to just taking from K-12 to add to the community college?
Chair Roland and members of the committee, we actually, as our partner superintendents know, actually developed a whole department within our institution and staffed it specifically for serving these students. And it's because of that programmatic partnership that our students are successful.
So you have hired people that specifically work with this group?
Yes, and that's possible because we commingle our funds. But I also point out we commingle funds on dual credit and expanded options as well. So this isn't an exception. This is similar to other programs in that regard.
Okay. Other questions for this group? Mm-hmm. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We now have a group of students. Susan Murray, Griselda Hernandez. Hope I got that right.
Griselda.
Say that again.
Griselda.
Oh, okay. Marin's, I don't know her.
Marina.
Marina, thank you. Is Polina as well?
She will come up after one of us vacates the seat.
Because there's a chair right behind you guys there. She could sit there if she wanted to be
thank
ready.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Roland and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Susan Murray from Chemeketa Community College, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on Senate Bill 322. Chemeketa has been in this business for quite a long time, over 15 years, and we are very concerned on the negative impact that it will have, particularly on our underrepresented populations. Because in Chemeketa, with all of our districts that we work with, the focus has always been on students with high potential but low opportunity. And these are students that face serious barriers with regard to social, regional, economic, and racial barriers in our areas. Our large school districts, McMinnville, Salem-Keizer, they don't really access those fifth-year services, and it's primarily because they bring so many resources to bear. It's the small districts. It's Fall City. It's Jervis. It's Woodburn, where the students are truly students of poverty, where going to college, the college-going culture is not the norm. For that reason, the fifth-year program has really created what I think educational reform has asked us to do, a complete partnership, a strong partnership with our local, small, rural districts that don't have the resources. And in this way, we are able to give that warm handoff of students whose very much their parents are often concerned about college-going culture, their the students themselves feel like they really have no opportunities financially, hurt financially, but beyond financially, these are students that may have had potential in high school, but just never saw themselves in a college environment. When we look at our data in the fifth year, and this is with our small school districts, last year, 96% of these students taking a full load of college credit completed and transitioned into Chemeketa programs. 50% continued on at Chemeketa in CTE degrees and gen ed degrees. 20% transferred to colleges and universities. Now, this includes schools like Dallas and Fall City and Jervis and the small groups that truly do not bring the resources to bear. For this reason, we really look at educational reform, and as Greg said, we were asked a while to do some of these things. One of them is the collaboration between school districts and community colleges. Another is to encourage career technical paths between high school and college. Another is to look at the student and focus on them that believed that they probably couldn't go to college or thought they wouldn't be able to afford it. We have high rates of success in transition, and we focus on student success together. Now, someone asked about what do the what do the community colleges bring in terms of finances and resources? We also have a department that funds special services for these students. I've asked two of our students to come, and there are many more that came voluntarily. So, Griselda.
Mr. Chairman Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Griselda Hernandez Cortez. I'd like to thank the Education Committee for this wonderful opportunity. I am so grateful and proud to have been part of the fifth year early college program in 2009. While most of my friends were planning their freshman year at a university, I was wondering what I would find myself doing that fall. Doubts and questions would fill my mind. Questions like how I would pay for college, was I academically prepared? So many doubts are normal for a first-generation low-income minority student. A lot of us face challenges that make it more difficult to see ourselves attend college and succeed. I come from a large family of four sisters, one brother. My parents worked very hard as farm workers to support us and provide our needs. As much as they wanted to provide us with a higher education, they couldn't. I needed guidance, and that same year I found out about the fifth year early college program. That's where I met Susan, Elena, Eden, and they were the ones that provided the resources necessary and guidance I needed. After being accepted in the program, I was actively involved in school and our community. A year later, in 2010, I earned my Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer degree, and that fall I attended Western Oregon University, where 3 years later, I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts, a Bachelor of Science in Psychology, a Bachelor of Arts in Spanish, and a minor in Humanities with a list of recognitions. Outstanding International Student Leadership Award from the International Student of Scholars Affair, President of the International Club, National Society of Leadership and Success, Phi Kappa Psi Academic Excellence in Modern Languages, and so on. Now, as an academic advisor at Chemeketa Community College in the Woodburn location, I meet with students every day who remind me of myself years back. But I have the resources and experience necessary now to help them succeed. I am so involved in our community and different partnerships. I am so grateful I was part of the fifth year early college high school cohort because it provided the resource and guidance I needed, improving my overall well-being. Now as an advisor, it's rewarding giving back by facilitating the transition for students. I hope you continue to support the funding programs like this that help bridge the gap between high school and college and establish a long-term solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee for this wonderful opportunity. My name is Marina Stengriff. I am from Chemeketa, Woodburn. And growing up as a newcomer from Brazil, I never hoped to attend college due to financial issues and due to the fact that none of my family members ever attended college. When I attended Woodburn High School in my senior year, I was a careless, non-motivated student who never showed up to school. I could have graduated early, but the only reason I didn't was because I wanted to complete my trilingual diploma in Russian, Spanish, and English. Even though I completed a trilingual diploma, I had no plans in furthering my education. After I graduated, I obtained a 2.7 GPA, and I was very lost and worried about my future. That was when my counselor informed me about the fifth-year program. When I started the program last year, I took it very seriously because I did not want to repeat my behaviors from past educational experiences. The fifth-year program provided me with very motivating teachers, and it provided me multiple opportunities for me to be a better student. Now I have a 4.0 GPA, and I never thought I was able to do that, but the fifth-year program showed me that it is possible. Since none of my family members ever attended college, I am a first-generation college student, and it has been hard for me to attend college because my family wanted me to start working right away. But I have different plans for myself. After this year with the fifth-year program support, I wish to further my education in Chemeketa and eventually transfer to Portland State University. I am very thankful to have the opportunity of being enrolled in the fifth-year program because it changed me as a student and as a person. And I hope that other students will have the same opportunity with the chance of turning their life around like I have. Thank you for this opportunity and to listening to my story.
Thank you.
Hi, Chairman Roblin and members of the committee. I am Paulina Klugin, and I come from a small school called Jervis High School. I've signed up for the fifth year program, and I believe that it's very needed in our school, because our school does not offer any sorts of arts, academics, or anything like that, as other than FFA, NHS, as well as minor other ones, but there's no art classes, none of that. And so our school is not very, does not have many qualities to it to help the students out and to where they want to go. And I'm a full-time student at Jervis and graduating this spring and planning to attend Shinemaketa for this upcoming fall of 2015. I come from a family of five children that one could only go to college because it became too expensive afterwards. I believe that if I could, and as well as there's in my graduating class of 2015, there's 84 students in a graduating class, and there's about 40 that have signed up for this fifth year program that would really like to benefit from it, because we have not gotten any other opportunities as this in our high school, because this is the first year it's been offered at Jervis High School. I would like to appreciate that this rare opportunity for you guys to, for the members of the committee to hear my story. And please remember that many students of my class are relying on this program to plan out their future and can all dearly benefit from it. And I plead that you make the right decision with not only my future, but as well as other students' future in your guys' hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? I would say it's Marina, mm-hmm. right? So from Brazil?
Yeah.
So you're quadrilingual?
Yeah.
Okay, because you can't leave the Portuguese out.
Yeah, but they didn't offer Portuguese.
Yeah, I knew that, but I
only had three children.
Anyway, thank you for being here.
On the committee?
Next, Jennifer. Yeah, there are people that have other committees and other things, and so they're going to have to leave because we were supposed to be done 15 minutes ago. But we just kind of, we're letting people testify because we think it's important. Jennifer Mitten, Andy Snow-Seidow, and Linda... Is that Mitten or Mitter? Hope I got some of those right. You got three people coming. That was good. Okay. It worked.
Thank you.
And it looks like we have two more groups after this, so that's good. Go ahead.
You want some?
Sure.
Okay.
Chairman, members of the board. I'm Jenny Minton, and I live in SIO. As a junior in high school, I was given the privilege to participate in the PACE program, and that allows students to attend community college while still in high school. By graduation, I had acquired over 80 credits at the community college. Willamette University was one of my top two choices for college, so I met personally with an admittance counselor. Willamette is considered prestigious and very selective. The counselor explained the larger schools have more challenging classes available and are more competitive than the smaller schools. A valedictorian with a graduating class of 1,500 is weighed more favorably than one from a class size of 50. He went on to explain that the rigor and the classes have a significant impact on how your GPA is weighed. Since many of the smaller schools are unable to offer the same variety and complexity of classes, these students are at a disadvantage. He said, because I had already demonstrated success in college and had taken the more difficult classes through the program, it allowed me to be more competitive with the students from the larger schools. Being a competitive candidate is not only increased my chance, everyone's chances of acceptance into college, but also has a huge impact on the types of scholarships and grants a school and private donors will offer. I was accepted to Willamette University with a generous financial package. Ultimately, I decided to attend Oregon State University's Honors College, where I'm a sophomore with senior standing, studying biophysics and biochemistry. Without the opportunity to take the more rigorous courses through the PACE program, I would have been ill-prepared for these challenges, which are faced for a science major. In many of the more difficult majors, it often takes 5 years to complete. With the credits I earned through the PACE program, it will allow me to graduate on time and without the added stress of a heavier course load. Lastly, PACE gave me direction and an avenue to reach my goals and to realize my potential. I can't imagine where I would be now without having the option to be prepared, competitive, and ready to move beyond high school and realize through the hard work and perseverance my goals in life.
Thank you.
Jennifer is my daughter. Chair Roblin, other members of the committee, thank you for taking the time today to allow us to speak. As a parent, I can only say that we want our children to dream, and we want them to dream big. And what I've heard from so many of these students is that we don't give them a dream. This program does that. It gives them a goal. And typically when we have a goal, we strive to do better. As I'm listening to the students speak, one of the things that really struck me is they actually have a plan. If you talk to a lot of high school students and you ask them, what are you going to do when you graduate? A lot of them will, I don't really know. You know, maybe I'll do this or maybe I'll do that. You talk to these kids that are involved with these programs and they know where they're going to go. They have a goal. They have an objective. They become more competitive that way because they actually are working towards something. So it does a lot more than just give them the fifth year of college education. It actually sets them up to do better because they have a goal in high school to be able to go on to that next step. Both of my students benefited from the PACE program or the fifth year programs. For us, we fall in the middle. We make too much money for any of the Pell grants or any of the other financial aid that's available to the students. And yet we have two students that's in college at the same time. At Oregon State, it's about $26,000 per year, including their housing, times two. I don't know that there's very many middle-income families that can afford to pay that. My kids entered into college. Jenny's 19. She's well on her way. I mean, she has senior standing at the university. Successful, driven. And I look at some of the other students that didn't go into these programs, and they're lost. They're almost swimming without a life support system. And what you can do for them is give them that. You can give them the hope. You can give them the dream. You can give them a goal. And to take that away, it would be so sad for real people, not just numbers. They're not numbers. They're students who will become tax-paying individuals in our community. It's a great investment, and I hope that you will not support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on your daughter, and congratulations.
Thank you.
She's all right.
Chairman Roblin, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Andy Saito. I am the high school counselor, PACE coordinator, Aspire coordinator, Lynn Benton High School team partnership member, and many other hats I wear. But being the coordinator of the PACE program at Sio High School, I oversee, this year we have 22 fifth year students. Next year, already with applications going out, we're going to have close to 30. I just have a question for you, and I heard earlier, and I want to make sure this is correct. For some reason, if which I would hate to see this bill does go through, would our students still be allowed next fall?
I think the amendment would say yes.
Okay. That was my first question. Thank you very much. I just wanted to let you know that our students at Sio High School, and I know earlier Senator Haas talked about a criteria for what we're looking for. We don't just let any student into the fifth year program. We start talking to them as freshmen about the program and about college career opportunities, with the fifth year program being an option. They have to have a 3.0 GPA. They have to have fulfilled all their high school requirements, including their extended application and their career ed requirements. Once they're in the program, I work with them through the two colleges. They have two progress reports that they have to submit on a fourth week and a seventh week. If they have any grade below a C, they will be put on probation and have mandatory tutoring. These kids are held accountable, and they're in there And through, this is my third year there, in my 3 years at Sio High School, averaging about 24 students a year, we've only had to let about two out of the program. So it is working. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thanks.
So next we'll have Morgan Allen, Randall Allen, and something Reinhardt, I believe. Okay. Yeah, come on up. Morgan, you want to start first? We'll let you go first. We'll let Mark go last.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Senators. I'm Randall Allen from the Jervis School District. I'm currently sitting as the president of the Jervis FFA chapter and as vice president of the Jervis National Honor Society. The number zero is a very significant number, if you even call it that. For example, there's nine zeros after Oregon's current GDP, which is $34 billion. The number zero is also the amount of dollars that is in my father's wallet right now. With this fifth-year program, it's giving me opportunity to go to college because, as many people say, they are too rich for the poor benefits and not rich enough for the rich benefits. But I don't think a lot of people know that there's also too poor for the poor benefits. I was not able to complete the FAFSA, which is needed for so many scholarships, because my family is too poor. Last year we made $16,000 total. That's because my mother hasn't worked for the past year due to an injury, and this Sunday is going to be her first day back on the job. With this bill being passed, it gives me a lot of doubts, not only just for my graduating class of 2015, but also for future students to have opportunities at this education. Is this program perfect as it stands? No, it's crude, but I'm going to fight tooth and nail until we have a program that can replace it in a better way. If we look around at European countries, they already have many of these programs where students get to go to college for free. So I'm not saying that this program's the best. However, I'm saying that it should stay around until we have a proper replacement for it and not leave a gap of no opportunities for students. Because I know that every single student that has sat in this room is a genius in their own way and deserves the higher education that we all strive for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Senator Robin, Chair, and the rest of the board. My name is Cameron Reinhardt. I am a senior at Jervis High School, and I've always wanted to do something for the state. I've always wanted to be important in my own way and do something that would help the state as a whole. I always found colleges intimidating. I never really had the initiative to want to go to college. College in general has just been something I never really wanted to experiment with because it seemed like a very big risk for my family, and just it was scary for me. I didn't feel like I had some way of getting my foot in the door and getting my, the opportunity to go to college. I was afraid to go to college and talk about enrolling, and the risk of trying college would do my family a lot of harm. Another thing is that to take my opportunity to go to school as me not being able to afford it would be, let's say it this way. I think that this fifth year program is what gave me the initiative to have a plan after high school, because beyond that, I had no plans. So that's just about all I could say about that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rilbin, members of the committee. Morgan Allen from the Oregon School Boards Association. I was sad to see all the kids from Albany go. You had about 10 kids from South Albany High School, proud graduate of South Albany High School, so it was nice to see those
young men and women here today talking. And I think this session we've had lots of bills. There's lots of talk about the importance of college credits, and there's a big, huge push to get more college credits in our high school, and I think everyone agrees that that's a good idea. But we keep hearing about all these barriers. There's financial barriers. There's turf barriers. There's licensure barriers. There's barriers to transfers of credits. And I think the testimony you heard today highlights a practice that some innovative districts went out and they figured out how to make it work for their kids. And of course, the challenge is, how do we pay for that? How do we make that sustainable? And I don't think there's a real problem with the model. Again, it's how do we pay for it? And you might imagine, representing board members from those 26 districts, there's a strong difference of opinion amongst many of our members about these programs. But the one thing they all agree on is that these are the types of programs that we as a state and you as a legislature should be supporting. And even though a majority of our members have concern with paying these programs out of the state school fund, they support the idea of these programs. And so, to take a little bit of different approach, there's all kinds of proposals in your committee, in the House Education Committee, in the Ways and Means Committees, that would spend millions of new dollars on accelerated learning programs, college credit programs. As a matter of fact, this biennium, just I did some quick math, I counted up at least $10 million that you as a legislature invested this biennium for things like Eastern Promise, Scale Up, college readiness, and not a penny of that money went to these types of programs. So I think if we roll up our sleeves and get creative and work with the districts, work with Senator Hass and Senator Gelser, I think we could figure out a way to make this work. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Thank you. So next we have Allison, Jeremy, and John. John Neal, Jeremy, and Allison. And if I have it right, there should be no one else. So if you're out there and you wanted to be talking and you haven't had a chance, be ready, because we'll give you one last chance. So let's move down the aisle. It's been working pretty well this way.
All right. Hello, Chair Roblin and other committee members. My name is Jeremy Shafto, and I also go to Jervis High School. As you've heard from many students, this is an opportunity-giving program. It can take us students at small schools and give us a chance to launch ourselves into the world at a better angle than other programs. We don't have as much as the bigger schools, where they have more scholarships, more people, alumni giving them money to be like, hey, go to college. We're from small schools. And so this is the opportunity we need to be able to get out there. And then also for the technical side, we have a lot of people in the technical industries that are starting to get to a point where they can retire, and this is going to leave a gap. So what this program does, it also funds people that otherwise wouldn't be planning on going to college to go to a CTE program and get certificates and technical jobs and get technical skills so they can jump straight into the workforce, therefore closing up a gap that will be left if not taken care of. So this is really an opportunity giver, and I just want to make sure people understand that this is something that's truly game-changing for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Roblin, and the rest of the committee. My name is Allison Opalincha. I am a mother to a SIO High School student. I have four children and one more child also living in my household that is not mine. My son is 16 years old, and he is actually graduating high school at 16 years old. He has plans, lots of plans for his life. And we are a middle-class family. We don't make a lot of money, but he plans on being the next Steve Jobs. Since 14 years old, he's been tearing apart cell phones and rebuilding them and fixing them. And he wants to do great things, and I know he's very capable of doing those great things, but without a college education, he's not going to get to do those great things. I want nothing more for my children to go to college. And he is he's the perfect example. He has the drive and the will to do anything that he can. He just needs that help. And the fifth-year program is what gives him, is going to give him that help. And not only for him, but for a lot of other students that I see that are bright that don't have it, because I know there's a lot of more families in SIO that are worse off than we are, and they wouldn't have that exit. They wouldn't have that drive, or wouldn't have the way to continue on and build their lives without this program. I am highly against anything changing about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Roblin
and the senators and committee members. My name is Johnny Raynell Jr. I'm a college professor at Chemeketa Community College and a doctoral candidate at Grand Canyon University. I will be graduating this June in organizational leadership and development with the emphasis in education. My thesis dissertation focus on the support in higher education as relates to faculty and college students. So my whole research is predicated on this particular issue. Just sitting through all these testimonies today, I found the gap in my research, if that makes sense. So I think this program is very much so needed. I can't reiterate it enough times. I have some of these students in my class, and I hear their expressions, their concerns as relates to finances, as relates to the support. These are their dreams, and if we don't support their dreams, they're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities. And I also see what these students mean to their communities. A lot of them are first-generation college students, such as myself, and I know how important that is. My father was in special education, and he graduated barely, and my mother was a high school dropout. So in order to make a change within the infrastructure of our families and add something positive to the community, it makes a huge difference. And I say this to say this because I know within the infrastructure of our family, the individuals that didn't get education, they're not doing very positive things as it relates to the community. So I really want you guys to understand that it is an adverse effect, if that makes sense. And thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Thanks. Everything. I will say we have one person I miss. Lyle, you have been very patient, so thank you. I just went right by your name. And to the Jervis kids, I want to say I was a high school principal at Marshfield High School, and one of our famous graduates from Marshfield High School is now a member of your community, is Mel Counts. I don't know if you know Mel, but he's a tall person in your community, and he was like our first seven-footer in our basketball team, and went on to do great things in all around the country. And he's been continues to be a good asset to Marshfield High School. So thanks for being here, too. Yes.
Lyle Utt, school board member of Greater Albany School Board. I'm here to persuade you to support high school 50-year programs. The program implemented by local districts gives support familiar to students entering a very unfamiliar system that they don't fully understand, and because of that, they do better. At Lynn Benton Community College, 50-year programs do better in all areas over students not in the program. 25% of the students in the Greater Albany School District are first-generation college students. The group of students... Okay, now I'm having...
Just take a breath and relax. It's fine.
Stop that. Good grief. Excuse me while I have problems with my... The group of students do not have family help dealing with the struggles of college issues and would like this option to be available to all students. I realize that the current funding issue is not fiscally supportable, but I also realize that for every one of the students going through this program, you will get more income tax from them. They will do better. Of those that finally realize when they need to go to college, then get a degree, will it be 5 years of lower income tax or 10? I personally would have benefited from this kind of thing. I went back to school 15 years after graduating high school, and I now get paid better wage because I went to college. And if I would have had a program like this, all of the students in the state have a program like this, our whole tax base would go up. Thank you for letting me talk.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I think that does now complete all the testimony. I'm happy we were able to get through it. only took us a little extra time, but I think it's well worth it. All of that is now on the official testimony. Other people may have sent materials in, and I know there's at least one video we can watch that's online. So if you're interested in that, there is a system here called OLIS, Oregon Legislative Information Service, I think that's it, that you can go online and see all this, see the testimony. They'll have a little camera picture next to it. You might even be able to see yourself. And I appreciate everybody being here today. And with that, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 322, and we will adjourn for today. And thanks for committee members being able to stay.